Hello everyone and welcome to another OneLiner.com podcast. I, as always, am Craig, and with me as always, Scott Morris.
Hello.
And Drew Tavendale.
How do you?
Hey, yeah, let's do this. The Way, Way Back is a film, is it not, Scott?
That's certainly one way of describing it.
Excellent. Perhaps... I've done a lot of preparation for this, but it would be remiss of me to share it with you.
The Way, Way Back follows a 14-year-old kid named Duncan. He is played by Liam James. He's on his way on a family vacation off to a beach house. His family is recently kind of joined up together. His mother has divorced his father and taken up with a new man, Trent, played by Steve Carell, who is a total douchebag. His mother, Pam, Toni Collette, however, seems quite happy with her, so they're off to try and make a start with this new family. Take some holiday time together with his new prospective half-sister, Caitlin. Problem is, Duncan is not particularly enamoured with this idea. He does not particularly want to be there. He's kind of shy and awkward, like a lot of 14-year-old kids, especially in films that are, you know, coming-of-age films. And so he is not particularly enthusiastic about the prospect of being trapped in a beach house with a father figure who he's rapidly growing to hate, and understandably so. Seeking to escape the enforced family activities, he eventually finds some sucker from this horrible place by riding off to a water park some miles away. Every day he will go out and get on his bike, travel off there, and basically just sit around the water park, which doesn't seem like fun, but well, he seems to like it. Eventually he comes to the notice of the manager of the park, Owen, played by the excellent Sam Rockwell. The two start to form a bond, somewhat unlikely. This leads to him becoming an employee of this water park, and the water park manages to bring him out of his shell and forms his character in a way that certainly his home life with his father, Trent, doesn't. The home life is where the bulk of the drama comes from. There's various hints of Trent, Steve Carell's character, having history with some of the people around the area, and hints of affairs, and basically it's not going too well for the home life, and so the fun and frivolity of this water park feels like a much better place for him to be. The Way, Way Back is actually one of the better films I've seen this year, possibly the best. For something that is nominally at least a coming-of-age drama, it does somewhat undersell how amazingly funny it is, and that's entirely due to Sam Rockwell, who just puts in an absolute blinding performance. Anytime he's on screen, the place just absolutely lights up. He's got some terrific lines in there and some great situations. He really is the life of this film. It's also a pretty good performance from Steve Carell, perhaps one of the few times where he doesn't really get any funny lines in it at all. He's not playing this as a comedian, he's played dead straight as a douchebag father, and is really well done at being absolutely hateful, one of the most irritating characters you've seen on screen in a long time. Really does provide a good foil for the drama. The home life drama is not particularly innovative. There's not much new going on there. However, it is very well executed and it does feel very believable. It doesn't descend into hysterics or, you know, modelling screaming matches or anything like that. It feels very realistic and naturalistic, and even when it comes to its inevitable conclusion, which is not particularly happy, it's not trying to force on happy endings or anything like that, but at the same time it feels like a kind of realistic ending that could feasibly happen in real life. A lot of really great lines in here which I've enjoyed heartily. Perhaps the funniest film I've seen this year, even more so than the out-and-out comedies of things like The World's End or This Is the End or any of the other films that are about the end of the world, which I've been kicking around this year. Definitely one of my favourite films of this year. A brace of great performances, but particularly Sam Rockwell, who just can do no wrong in my eyes. Really tremendous performance from him, and a stellar supporting cast as well from most of the people that are working in the water park. Definitely worth a look. I would heartily recommend this to anybody. So go and see it.
Go and see it. It would be remiss of you not to. It is a notion generally accepted that Kick-Ass was quite a good film. This month sees the release of Kick-Ass 2. Drew, is Kick-Ass 2 a good film?
Well, we'll come to that. Let's talk about Kick-Ass 2 first. After the events of the first film, Kick-Ass's fame has inspired many other regular citizens to don silly costumes and equally silly monikers, and try their hand at becoming real-life superheroes. Many of these would-be vigilantes have grouped together to increase their strength. So, unable to leave his vigilante life behind him, our hero joins one of these outfits, the trademark baiting Justice Forever. As these would-be do-gooders take to the street, resentment and hatred is fomenting in the heart of the artist formerly known as Red Mist, who blames Kick-Ass for the death of his father, and he vows to hunt him down. To help him in his goal, he assembles a team of supervillains, which he ever so subtly dubs Toxic Mega Cunts, and sets about becoming Justice Forever's arch nemesis. The body of Kick-Ass 2 is much like the original film, though in terms of amount, more, but in effect, less. Going with the belief that swearing is indeed big and clever, writer-director Jeff Wadlow takes elements of the original and amplifies them and indeed proves that more is less. Kick-Ass 2 is hamstrung by a decidedly uneven tone and the presence of subplots, including the parental expectation cliché that the first film couldn't give a shit about or in fact outright subverted, and rather tiresome subplots of bitchy high school girls. Likewise, the premise of the main characters of the film being real-life superheroes is undermined somewhat by one member of the toxic megacunts more or less being She-Hulk. Even while enjoying it, much of it made me uncomfortable, and it's not difficult to see why Jim Carrey was so uneasy about the level of violence. This isn't cartoon violence, particularly in the world that Kick-Ass has created. It's brutal violence and often feels gratuitous. Even more unpleasant is a main character threatening to rape a woman. Despicable, but no, wait, it's okay, it's funny, because he can't get it up to rape her. Now, that alone might be enough reason for some people to avoid this, but for me, most of the rest of the film had built up enough goodwill with me that I chalked that one up to poor decision making. I can, however, easily see why many people would be less forgiving of that. Now, all of that's not to say Kick-Ass 2 isn't enjoyable. It is. It rips along at a great pace, there are some great action sequences, and it's certainly quite funny. The highlight in the absence of Nick Cage is Chloe Moretz's Hit Girl, but there are good turns from, amongst others, Jim Carrey, John Leguizamo and Christopher Mintz-Plasse, though we've surely reached the end of the line of films in which he plays McLovin, albeit in this case evil McLovin. Now, if you enjoyed the first film, you're almost certain to enjoy this, even if it is a lesser product. But one more note of disappointment on which to end, though. Daniel Kaluuya plays a member of the toxic megacunts called Black Death, and now I consider that a missed opportunity. And a missed opportunity to reprise the role for which I know him best. Because when it comes down to it, what's more evil than a super-powered, malicious traffic warden called Parking Patawayo? And that's all I have to say about that.
Scott, would you like to expound?
I would largely repeat what Drew's saying. I did walk out of this film thinking I enjoyed it as much as the original, but I suspect, thinking about it more, I felt that way because this film is so similar to the original that you could very well come up with an argument saying that there's actually no point making this film. Despite Jim Carrey's curiously timed kvetching over the violence of his character, which turned out to be in just the right window to maximise publicity in the lead up to the launch, not that I'm suggesting anything, he does put in a pretty amusing turn. I did enjoy that at least, and he does have a point. Like Drew saying, comic book or not, this film is really bloody violent, and so obviously it's got a 15 rating.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's probably because of swearing rather than violence.
Yeah, because what you've got to remember is that if people are having sex in it, which is wonderful and lovely, it's an 18. If people are killing people and beating them up, then that's a 15 because yes, we're not allowed to enjoy ourselves, I think is the message that the BBFC and the MPAA sent to us.
The illegal stuff is far less upsetting.
It's a strange film, I guess, when you think about it in reflection. I mean, there is this driving plot of the motherfucker trying to take revenge against Kick-Ass and Hit-Girl, but basically that's more or less just a catalyst to go into a fairly... Well,
pioneering plot device, man.
All it's really doing is a background to start talking about identity and discovering yourself and things like that. And that really seems to be the main struggle for most of the characters in it. It's inside the protagonist's heads as they try and work out what they want to do with their life, which is, I suppose, a somewhat subverting way to take something that's still a nominal comic book superhero kind of film. But it doesn't quite hang together well enough. It is just a bit patchy because you wind up these scenes of, you know, people talking about, oh, but I don't know if I want to do this, and and then a pretty tacked on fight scene and so on and so forth. It doesn't quite hang together particularly well. It does take some very dark turns, like Drew saying about that rape scene, which I think would probably have been better had they just kept it as a rape scene, because it would have fit in with the kind of dark tone that most of this is going through. But I think it's a complete misjudgment to try and turn it into a joke towards the end. That just kind of demeans everything. Yeah, that's a bit silly. Didn't like,
yeah, I mean, wasn't sort of that. There's been a lot of talk, particularly recently too, about games and films, etc., and comic books using rape as a device, but it does work in a lot of situations because it is such a powerful thing. But then just to utterly undermine it with a joke, it doesn't serve anybody well.
Yeah, despite all that, I did enjoy it. It's not a perfect follow-up to a very good original, but like you say, I hope this is the last stop in the franchise train. But at least it's no disgrace to its predecessor.
No, if you like the first one, you're going to enjoy this because there's a lot more of the same. It's just that it's very much the lesser of the two.
Yeah, diminishing returns is kicking in.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been talk of a Hit Girl spin-off, which I rather hope doesn't go ahead because it's
actually
going to be the same thing again, but with just one character. I'm not sure how that would work.
And one joke.
Yes.
Well, they keep coming up with these kind of things. I'm still waiting for that spin-off of the Halle Berry Jinx film from Tomorrow Never Dies or whatever. That was mooted for a while.
Madness. Sheer madness.
Madness.
Which leaves us then with Elysium, the second movie from director Neil Blomkamp, following on from District 9, which, a great film. I still find bizarre to have been nominated for Best Film that year at the Oscars, but that's the Oscars. Scott, does Elysium live up to the promise of that first feature?
Yeah, I'd say mostly. You're catapulted 140-odd, give or take, years into a futurescape. Guess what? It's a bleak futurescape. Who'd have thought it? Is there any other kind of futurescape other than bleak? No, everything in the future is bleak. So this,
I believe dystopia is a synonym for future.
The future, it's what's for dinner. In this world, we have run out of resources, apparently. Massive overpopulation, crowded conditions, lack of food, all the usual happy, fun, joy stuff. The world seems to have generally decayed and frayed around the edges to the point where LA looks more like a collection of skyscrapers that are somewhat decaying and looking more like Brazilian favelas. And in one of the inhabitants of this bleak, dystopian, grim future is Max, played by Matt Damon. He is was a gang member, but he's now trying to go straight after a period of incarceration. He now works at a robotics factory, putting together the police robots that run around enforcing the laws of this bleak dystopian future. However, before long, he's sucked into an unfortunate industrial accident and is given a lethal dose of radiation, and he's going to die within 5 days. What a bummer. There's only one way to get around this, and that is to get off this damn planet. The Elysium of the title is a ring world, I suppose. It's probably too small to be called that, but a space station where trials and tribulations of future day Earth don't exist. It's lots of lovely green open spaces, and basically where the 0.1% of the future live in luxurious surroundings with access to advanced technology such as a booth that can apparently cure any medical condition.
Yes, it runs on Future Technology 4.
Yeah, Future Technologies 4 through 8. So Max decides that he needs to get up there. He calls on some favours from the old gang that he used to work with, which is headed up by Spider, played by Wagner Moura, who you may have remembered from Elite Squad. Hopefully looks completely unrecognisable in this. He's given an option to get up there, but what he needs to do is get a hold of the information that is carried around inside one of these Elysium dwellers' heads. In this case, it's going to be John Carlyle, played by William Fichtner's head, that he's going to delve into, Johnny Mnemonic style. The idea being that that this information can then be sold or can access bank accounts, that kind of thing. But it turns out that John Carlyle has been working on something a bit more interesting than usual bank accounts. He has been in collusion with the sort of head of security, Delacour, played by Jodie Foster, who's planning something of a military coup up there. Now Max finds himself with the keys to the mainframes that are controlling everything on the Elysium station, and gets a very large target painted on his head. Delacour enlists the help of Earthbound Agent Kruger, played by Geraldo Copley, who is dispatched with a number of his guns for hire to try and track him down and bring him up there. There's a further complication thrown by Max's old friend and her daughter also needing some medical attention, and he's trying to get them up to, well, as they become embroiled in this scenario, he tries to get them up onto the Elysium station to try and save their lives as well. So it goes. It's actually quite entertaining for the most part. It doesn't really slow down or anything, which is rather useful, because if you start thinking about Elysium, you'll see very large plot holes that you could drive anything through. And I don't really have too much criticism about the actual film itself. As you sat there watching it, I was entertained all the way throughout it. Matt Damon puts in a pretty decent performance, and Charlotte Copley's sort of commendably evil, and Jodie Foster just puts in a good turn as well. It's all quite engaging, and it just seems that it works pretty well. As a bit of sci-fi entertainment, it's probably as good as anything you'll see this year. The actual world that Elysium has built, though, doesn't actually make any sense at all. especially if you think about the devices that they're using towards the end of this film. It's rapidly apparent that they have basically cracked a way to make unlimited free energy and then convert that energy into matter with no particular problems at all. And if you can do that, why on earth has everything just gone to shit so much? Because at that point, you basically have the keys to the universe. I don't quite understand why anything is the way that it is. It doesn't really make a lot of sense if you're wanting to think about it as a cohesive worldview. But if you do not demand that level of joined up thinking from a 90 something minute film, whatever it is, that is basically just a roller coaster entertainment ride, then I think you will get quite a lot out of Elysium. I enjoyed it a fair amount. It did not blow my socks off, but it is somewhere between good and very good, and certainly entertaining. Certainly more professionally done than District 9. It's inherited some of Blokamp's shaky cam nonsense. I wished at some point during some of the fight scenes that would actually just stop and slow down a bit rather than jerking all about the place.
That's a particular hatred of mine in a lot of films.
Yeah,
you must change camera angle every 3 seconds or possibly sooner in any hand-to-hand combat scene.
I felt that did ruin a little some of the fights towards the end of the film, but that's both a relatively minor complaint and something that you could level at pretty much every film these days. So it's by no means unique in that respect. Certainly deserves more of your attention than something like Oblivion from a few months back does. I think it's a better and more imaginative film than that, and even if it doesn't quite stack up properly as a self-contained world, it's still worth a look. Yeah, give it a bash.
Yes, Drew, would you have anything to add to that?
A few things. It would seem I enjoyed it a fair bit less than Scott, which is not to say that I didn't enjoy it, but I thought it was merely okay, I guess. I enjoyed Matt Damon's performance, certainly. I've always found him quite likeable. I thought Jodie Foster was curiously hamstrung by her ridiculous accent, which seemed pointless and unnecessary. Charlton Copley, I guess he's okay. He's not a particularly pleasant person, and that's the whole point. That's okay. The other problems I had where, as Scott said, the world doesn't make any sense. Even from the beginning, it was bothering me. They have, in this world, robot police officers, but they're robot police officers with prejudice, which doesn't make a great deal of sense and got me off on the wrong foot quite early on. And prejudices are based on personality, etc. And these are robots, but they were hassling people. I don't disagree with most of what Scott said, other than that, just for most of it, other than the Jodie Foster thing I mentioned, I didn't enjoy it as much, but it's okay. It's quite interesting. But if you do pause to think about the world, it makes no sense at all. Yeah, what he said, but turned down a bit.
Well, that about wraps it up for this relatively brief podcast. We will be back soon with more reviews of stuff. In the meantime, I was Craig, as always. Scott was Scott.
Goodbye.
And Drew was a Drew.
Goodbye.
Catch y'all on the flip side. There's bound to be a YouTube video somewhere. YouTube, I would imagine.
It's where they keep them.
I can't find these YouTube videos, Mum. Try in the top of the cupboard. Oh, sorry, I found them. They're on YouTube.
You do see that YouTube are in fact trying to create a channel on YouTube called YouTube Videos, as if YouTube video was a thing, a genre,
somewhat recursive.